Welcome to Skills of the Future, a podcast by Perennial Talent. In this mini-series, we explore how to apply skills and competencies to the world of work.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast, Skills of the Future, and our mini-series on HR Game Changers, applying skills and competencies to the world of work. Today, we're specifically going to be talking about hiring and selection. My name is Andrea Butler, and I'm a co-founder and principal consultant at Perennial Talent. My guest today is Simon DiMatteo. Simon is a seasoned global talent acquisition professional who has over 20 years of experience working both within the search world and corporate settings. Originally from the UK, Simon moved to London to learn the recruitment industry within the investment banking community. In the early 2000s, he moved over to Canada, where he eventually became national director of a large international recruiting firm called Spirion. Subsequent to that, Simon has held the lead talent acquisition roles at Walmart Canada, Spin Master Entertainment, and he is currently the head of talent acquisition at Good Food Market, a rapidly growing Canadian insurgent in the lucrative online grocery market. In his spare time, Simon enjoys spending time with his family, traveling to weird places, and takes the corporate athlete mentality very seriously, ensuring a disciplined fitness plan is part of his daily routine. Welcome to the show, Simon.
Hey, Andrea, how you doing?
Good. And yourself?
I'm doing very well. That was quite the intro there, so I feel quite special now.
I do have to know, when you say weird places, what is a weird place you've traveled to?
I'll give you one last year. Was it last year? No, it wasn't last year because no one traveled anywhere, right? It was the year before. The world's changing so quickly now. But I went to the Mazouga Desert just outside Morocco, which is part of the Sahara Desert there. And I was sort of doing camelback trailing across there. And it's like, hey, this is a weird experience. Then ended up in a place called Fez, in these old medinas, which is almost like the cradle of life there, kind of thing. And so it's, you know, I like to go to places where it's not all laid on like, all-inclusive holidays. I like to go somewhere where, hey, there's a little bit of danger here and it makes it a bit more interesting. So anytime I get to, any chance I get to do anything like that, would be great. I think my next place I really want to go to is North Korea. So hopefully at some point, and if my wife lets me, I'll be heading there.
Interesting choice. Well, it's definitely off the beaten path and very culturally different.
Definitely.
All right. Icebreaker question for you, and I'm hoping it'll be an interesting one, but what's the best thing that you've watched or read lately?
Well, I've watched and read a few things. It's like, what's like, for an icebreaker, it's supposed to be fun. But I think on a serious note, I've read this book. It's called The Power of Moments by two guys, Chip and Dan Heath. It's about exploring why certain brief experiences can kind of jolt us and elevate us and change us. And so how can we learn to create memorable moments in what can sometimes be kind of a mundane and unfortunately mundane work life and home life as well, given where we are at the moment. I'm not quite doing it justice, but it's a very light read and it'll let you look at things in life and make simple tweaks. That'll sort of not only impact you, but others around you to have more of a fun and meaningful experience. So that's kind of one of the books I've read lately. And it certainly plays into the whole candidate experience that we're trying to emulate, you know, not only here, but places I've worked before. It's like, hey, how do we make this world interesting? How do we make this process interesting? Because candidates can have about 50 different interviews and the one that sticks out the most is going to resonate with them and go, hey, I'd like to join that company. So that's kind of a book that I've read lately. I do watch a lot of Modern Family as well. I just started to get into that and really, really enjoy it. It's like a bit of a hidden gem that I never knew existed before. So that's how I get my evening entertainment at the moment. I watch a couple of episodes of that.
And you have many, many episodes to choose from since they made a ton of seasons.
I know, I'm excited.
There you go. All right. So moving on then to our still fun, but more HR focused questions. The world has obviously changed quite a bit in the last year or so. So from your perspective, how do you think the world of hiring and selection has specifically changed?
Well, I mean, I think it's been continually changing over the years. I mean, I think you've got, you know, from the days of the Rolodex to LinkedIn, that was a huge change, right? Where, hey, recruitment and recruitment teams have access to absolutely everybody out there now. There's nobody hidden. There's no hidden folder or Rolodex of people who only certain search firms and recruitment agencies have access to. Everyone's got access to everyone. So the job of a recruiter has actually become a little bit easier. We have to be a bit more resourceful, but you know, it's made it a lot more easier than where it was a few years ago. But even in the last sort of 12, sort of 18 months, even I'd say, is the automation of the pre-selection and the shortlisting of candidates has taken a lot of the admin work out of the process. So recruiters can now focus on speaking to the right people rather than just filtering through lots and lots of people. So you've got like, there's a number of technologies out there at the moment that have kind of AI or machine learning where, you know, instead of having to read 200 resumes to get to the one you want, they stack rank them. So, hey, the top 10 are probably the most sort of relevant ones for the search that you're trying to sort of fill at that particular time. And so that's a big one, is just the automation, the pre-selection process. I think employer branding is key these days. It used to be the power of, you know, the recruitment teams and the individuals in the teams to go out and find great people. But now, you know, every company is really working on their employer brand, and people have choices these days. You've got to have a very strong employer brand, which is congruent with your corporate brand. And it's got to have an appeal in there. Because again, this proverbial war on talent that we talk of, people have got choices. And if you don't look good from the outside, you're never going to get those applicants. And so you can source as hard as you want, but you want people to be attracted to you. And if you want people to be attracted to you, your employer brand has to be very, very relevant and on point to the target that you're going after.
Is there anything you've seen that people have done that's particularly effective in terms of making that brand very appealing?
I think it's speaking to the people you're trying to attract. And so, I mean, I'll just use something like Shopify as an example. Okay, they've got a pretty solid, careers website. They've got some good content going out, but they really rely on their corporate brand. Everybody wants to join Shopify because it's Shopify. That's the crazy thing. It's like there's no obvious reasons other than, hey, it's a successful company. It's Canadian, yes, and you're going to get paid a lot of money and what have you. But I think just the appeal of the corporate brand itself, people want to be associated with cool brands these days. Anything with an "ify" on the end seems to be all the rage. And so, you know, I don't think that there's lots of companies doing great sort of individual branding sort of initiatives, but I think overall, it's the power of the corporate brand is incredibly important to make sure that you attract the employees or the potential employees further down the line.
So you've kind of touched upon, you know, you were talking about the automation there earlier, but are there any other changes that you've seen when it comes to hiring?
You talked about the automation piece. You've talked about the candidate experience. That's become huge. And I think, I kind of talked about earlier about that book that I was reading is, you know, you have to make sure that you've got it has to be high touch, highly transparent process where, you know, not only is it slick, it's quick, and you can sort of make decisions very quickly on it. That's from the internal piece, but from the external piece, like people want to know, hey, what's happened to my CV? What's happened to the process? Where am I? I had an interview. So the communication pieces is become incredibly important, and the feedback piece, everyone's looking for feedback these days. You know, feedback is a gift, as my old CEO used to say to me all the time. It's like, you have to make sure that we're trying to do the best job you can on, you know, getting some kind of feedback, be it positive or negative, to these candidates, because ultimately they are potentially your customers at the same time. So you have to treat everybody equally. And if you lose a candidate or you turn a candidate off, you could be turning the customer off, and that hits the bottom line as well. And so, you know, you have to look at a lot of these things. It's not just an HR crusade. This is not just a talent acquisition crusade. You have to see yourself as a business person and look at it and look at things more holistically than I think we have before, where everything was like, hey, this is HR's function, which feeds into the corporate function, which feeds into the overall sales. Whereas now this is like one ecosystem that all has to work together.
Absolutely. And something we've heard from a lot of folks too has to do with more like the diversity and, you know, getting those types of candidates on board. Have you found any particular strategies there that have been effective to really make sure you're not missing out on some good candidates?
Diversity comes in all shapes and forms. And I think it's, you know, firstly, you need to have a diversity plan, and certainly not a policy. I think some companies come out with a diversity policy. As soon as you say policy, then you know, it's like, oh, that's now mandated, which means we're checking boxes. I think you need a plan that's well articulated internally to your staff and to your employees, and that these guys can go out and really communicate this to, you know, their networks as well. You know, we're at this sort of tipping point in evolution where, hey, everything goes on the internet, nothing is sacred anymore, and so you have to speak honestly, you have to speak genuinely, you have to be relevant, and you have to look at, hey, diversity is so important to make better decisions in any business, be it, you know, gender-based, be it you know, LGBTQ. It's like you have to make sure that you have one voice that speaks to all of these different fractions there that sort of can really add to your organization at the same time. And so there's no one silver bullet with anything to do with recruitment at all. I think if there was, then I probably wouldn't be on this podcast now. I'd be sitting in the Bahamas, on a yacht or something like that. But I think it's like, hey, you have to keep trying these different things. You keep having to look at different avenues to get information out there. But I think the main thing is enable the people in your organization to be your brand ambassadors. If you can do that, and you understand that sort of that diversity is going to be the key to sort of growth in the business, it'll just be, you'll then sort of start to have a better employer brand, and you'll be able to tell a better story. And going back to the, you know, some of the changes, I think it's now about who can tell the best story, not about who pays the most money or who's got the best benefits or who's got a pool table in the you know, in their staff room and what have you. It's like, who is the best storyteller is going to win the war on talent.
Awesome. As you know, I'm a big fan of competencies and skill-based management. So I'm just curious on your thoughts when it comes to, you know, hiring and recruitment, are there key kind of skills or competencies that you find to be particularly important, especially now?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, everything is important right now. I've never seen it where, you know, you can go out and try and hire a VP of supply chain and it's impossible to find the right person, especially with the expectations of the business. Same goes for if you're looking for an accounts payable person, the expectations have risen. Everyone is expecting the best of the best. No one is willing to suboptimize talent. And so it's like, hey, you know, we think someone's good, but then they go through a process and they're not as good as, you know, we hope them to be. And so, you know, I think that, every skill is critical in that supply chain of people at the moment. But I think these particular areas that I'm seeing a lot more sort of demand on at the moment is around the technology side. This is huge, you know, with everyone sort of going online, e-commerce platforms are becoming so important to every organization, that whole direct-to-consumer piece. And I'm seeing this definitely in good food at the moment, you know, software developers and engineers, product managers, UI UX designers, things like site merchandising specialists, data analysts and data science to do the back end to see how, you know, how these launches and how these technologies are working. If we do the data and analytics on it to make sure that, hey, we have invested in the right places. So that's one new world that's definitely sort of sprung to life in the last 12 months. And again, you'll see this because a lot of companies and a lot of businesses, you couldn't go into them. You actually had to order online. So those with the poorer e-commerce platforms really suffered in the last 12 months. Those people who made those investments before this have really thrived in it. And there's some real darlings of the pandemic out there, you know, and good food is definitely one of them. But then, you know, like Amazon and Shopify, all these guys are doing really well. What you found was at the beginning of the pandemic, companies go, oh my God, unless we are agile, unless we pivot right now, we're going to lose this war. And so that put a huge demand over the last few months, actually the last 12 months, on this type of talent. But then it's not only that piece, there's the creatives, the guys, the visionaries who have to put the story together and make this beautiful veneer to make the customer journey incredibly attractive as well. And so, the main thing is, I think a lot of companies go, hey, it's all about engineers, software engineers, data scientists, data analysts. But the one thing is, I don't truly believe that AI or machine learning will ever replace the creative process. Creative is about something new. AI and machine learning is about sort of what's formally happened. And so those pieces within there with creatives, that's huge as well. And then the other piece, again, given the world we live in at the moment, supply chain and logistics is huge. With everyone ordering online, which has now become habitual, we need better network infrastructures. You know, we need to get products to people quicker, and people don't have patience. I don't know if you shop on Amazon Prime at all, but if you shop on Amazon, if it ain't on Prime, I ain't clicking the button, right?
And it's true.
Because I want it yesterday. And if I have to wait 6 months for it to come, then I'll probably go somewhere else to buy it. And so, you know, it's the network infrastructure that's going to get the speed of the products to people's homes as quickly as possible. But then you've got this other problem that's like, yeah, the whole gig economy, especially around couriers, people are still consuming, whether it be food, whether it be, you know, toys, whether it be, you know, furniture, you know, someone's got to get this from the warehouses to people's doors. And a lot of companies have got their own sort of, they've got their own internal sort of logistics teams. They either use 3PLs, or there's a whole gig economy of couriers, you know, where you can start up your own company, and now you're delivering for Amazon, you're delivering for Good Food, you're delivering for all these companies. And so the demand for these kind of people is far outweighing the supply of talent out there. And again, it comes back to the best employers with the best brands. They need to leverage this, and they'll be able to attract the best people out there. But it just seems like everything is in high demand at the moment. And maybe this is a Canadian thing. Maybe it's a Toronto or a Montreal thing. But it just seems to be that, hey, with this new world we're working in at the moment, technology jobs, supply chain jobs, and then the creative roles as well, they seem to be mm-hmm. in the hottest demand. And then in reality, it's like, hey, you now need your best recruitment teams and your best branding out there to go and find these people, because everybody wants the same talent.
Exactly.
And, you know, and so
demand.
It totally is supply and demand, and we're definitely in a demand situation at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that some of those trends were kind of headed in that direction before, you know, the pandemic absolutely changed things?
Yeah, I think people go in that direction anyway. People realize, hey, there's some level of like efficiency and time savings on everything I can do at the moment. And I think, you know, just again, working for Good Food, it's a good example where, you know, people will start to go, hey, I need more convenience in my life. And so we need to start having things quicker. We need to take the thinking out of a lot of the stuff that we're doing at the moment. And so if I can click a button and have it delivered to my house within 2 hours, then that's what I'm going to do. And so I think that was where people were going. And then the pandemic, you know, lockdown, people shut behind doors. It then forced people into having to do this then. And now after 12 months, it's become habitual. And so I think anybody who hasn't caught up with the race at the moment, they're in serious trouble for when the lockdown finishes as well. Yeah, people are going to go to restaurants. People are going to go out to the shops now, then more for the experience. But I don't think it's going to be about going to buy lots of stuff. I think the way shopping is going to sort of change in the future is people want to go and have like great experiences and then leave the facility or the shop or wherever they were and then go and click it and buy it online kind of thing instead. And so I think just the habits are going to change dramatically over the next sort of few years, if not already. But I think it's still to see what it looks like on the other side. But I think that, you know, I order stuff online now. It's like, it's too easy to order online. And that's, I think that's, and I'm just, you know, it's just me, but I've got a feeling that a lot of my friends, family, and people I know tend to do this kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, I know that I was talking to a lot of people too, certainly over the holiday period there. And it's like, yeah, you go to the mall, do your shopping. And then it's like, well, you can't do that really this year. So, oh, this was super easy just to do all of your holiday shopping online. Why would I go back?
Exactly. And like, I think there's going to be a fear of people for a while. It's like, you know, I've only seen my wife and my kids really, and the odd person here and there for the last few months. Going back into the reality of hundreds of people crowding around me, it's just going to be this really, really weird experience. And I don't think everybody enjoys it. And I think we're going to see less people out and about on the streets these days and for a long, long time yet. And that will then put the emphasis on, okay, the e-commerce side of things, the technology piece. It's almost like going into an episode of Black Mirror, if you've ever seen that show.
But, oh, yes.
you know, where it's like, hey, eventually the machines are going to gang up on us. But, you know, we're on that journey where, hey, technology has just enabled us to have more convenient lifestyles. And I think that's the trend that's going to continue for a long while. Yeah,
exactly. Totally agree. So speaking of the future a little bit, what do you think are the future threats or pain points if organizations really don't take the time to really develop that brand and attract the type of talent they're looking for?
I think it's pretty simple. If you don't move with the times, you'll fall behind, lose your competitive advantage, and lose your top talent. if you know what skills are needed, you can do one or two things. You want to put hiring plans in place to attract these kind of people ahead of time, you know, working with schools, working with external bodies to make sure you're future-proofing and have access to the early talent. I think the early talent is critical at this point, okay? But also on top of that, you've got to make sure that your brand is attractive enough to appeal to these type of employees and these type of, these potential employees anyway, is, you know, make sure that you've got a brand that speaks that. Again, I'm going to keep deviating back to your employer brand because I think that's so much more important these days than a lot of the components that go into the hiring process. It's like, hey, if you don't have a good employer brand, people can research you and you're not even going to get the clicks. And so you're going to need a 10 times bigger recruitment team to go and hunt all these people down. Whereas you've got someone like, let's just use a Shopify, who don't need a massive recruitment team because they have so many people who are actually applying to them because it's such an attractive employer brand at the moment. But I think even on top of that, it's put the training and development plans in place to retool your current workforce. I think one thing we're doing is, and this, I think every company is guilty of this, it's almost like we're always looking for the best people, and the best people live outside of our organization. It's always trying to find that next new shiny sort of object, which is really the next new employee. It's like, hold on, when you hired the people that you've got in your organization, you did that for a reason because they were great, and now you're sort of leaving them behind for the next new thing. Look at the people that you've got and look at the skill gaps that you have and the anticipated skills that are need moving forward, and retool these guys, put the training in place, put the development plans in place, and give these guys the opportunity to thrive, because the cost of acquisition is way more expensive than the cost of retraining people. And so I think if you can do a mixture of those two things, you know, have a really robust hiring plan, maybe at the sort of infancy stage of someone's career to get them early, or put the training plans to retool your workforce, that's going to at least give you some kind of competitive advantage out there on talent.
Yeah, and I think that fits well with what you said earlier, in that acquisition isn't just one checkbox on the HR kind of checklist, so to speak. Like, your talent lifecycle has to be integrated. So it's not just focus on acquisition or focus on development. You have to really invest in both.
Exactly.
So, fun question for you now. If you could give advice to other talent acquisition professionals, what is the important, one of the most important things you could, would say to them?
I mean, there's a few things. And I think I can speak from experience, but I think I can also speak from what I've sort of seen work with other talent acquisition leadership. I mean, firstly, don't live in a bubble. You know, make sure you're getting out there and speaking to other talent acquisition and HR professionals to see what they're doing. I think it's just, hey, the more perspective you have, the more sort of ideas you'll be able to bring to the table in your own organization. But when the decisions I've made to join my last three companies were based on, what is the vision of leadership around talent? Okay. And if you're only interviewing with HR during your process to becoming a leader in talent acquisition, then that would suggest to me that that's probably an HR crusade you're involved with, not a corporate crusade. You want to make sure that when you're going through the process, that you meet the business people. You know, you don't want to be seen as just an HR practitioner. As great as that is, you want to be seen as a commercially astute HR practitioner, and somebody understands the business and who can connect the dots. And so when I joined the last three companies, it's like, hey, I met executives, you know, and the last two companies, for sure, I met the CEOs, and that was really, really important. It was like, hey, if the CEOs are interviewing the head of recruitment, these guys have a real appetite to make sure that we're bringing the best people into the organization. What does that bring? That brings the enablement of that division, but also brings the investment in that division as well. And I think a lot of recruiters fall into the, oh, that's a great brand and that's a, you know, really strong salary. But then it's like, hey, do you have access to your CEO? And I'll say no. It's like, well, how far can you really push your agenda? And is this just an HR crusade at that point? And so I think that's my biggest piece of advice to HR and TA leaders, is make sure you're interviewed, or make sure the business has a real stake in this and involve them in the process along the way. As you're trying to build your practices and processes, don't do it in a bubble. Make sure that you're involving them, you're getting their ideas and getting their opinions. And when you roll something out, don't send it out from HR every time. Get the CEO to send it out for you, because when the CEO or a senior vice president or somebody who's a founder of a business sends something out, people listen. So you need to leverage the people around you to help you get your agenda ahead.
Absolutely. That was the final question that I did have for you today. Was there anything else that you wanted to add before we signed off?
No, I think, you know, like, tarot magician is fun. It's one of those roles and one of those functions where one day you're the greatest thing ever, and the next day, you know, something's gone wrong, and your team and your name is dirt across the business because one hire went wrong or something like that. And I think, you know, we've got to sometimes take a step back and understand, okay, look, there's ups and downs in everything. Don't beat yourself up over it, but always look to continually improve and never rest on your laurels in talent acquisition. It's like, hey, you're only as good as your last day. And so make sure that you leverage people around you, you try and get the new investments in technology, and you work with leadership and don't just make it an HR crusade. Because if you do, it's you're going to have a real tough time. And when there's some companies out there at the moment who are really investing heavily into employer branding, into technology, and they're integrated with the business, these are the guys who are really going to prosper and get their hands on that talent that every organization needs right now. So yeah, that's my final sort of little bit there.
That and employee brand.
Employee branding. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Perfect. Well, I do want to thank you, Simon, for taking the time to join me today. And listeners, if you want to learn more about what Simon is up to these days, you can reach out to him on LinkedIn. So thanks, Simon, for joining me.
My pleasure, Andrea, and I look forward to speaking again soon.
Sounds good. And thanks, everyone, for listening.